We are going to speak today on the subject of humility and prophecy, part 9, subtitle, The Four Sieges on Jerusalem. This study today will be on the four prophetic sieges in the Bible upon Jerusalem. Now, the one that Bible students seem most concentrated on is the time when Jerusalem is attacked and God fights for them, defeats the nations, and introduces the kingdom on earth with the ancient worthies. This we think of as Armageddon, at least most of us. And we're all well aware of the siege on Jerusalem that happened in AD 70 to 72 that resulted in the destruction of the temple. There is also a final siege, which Revelation talks about. This one happens at the end of what is called the little season, during which the devil has been loosed. There's more in the Old Testament about this event than might be imagined. Then there is a siege spoken of by Jesus and several of the prophets, which precedes Armageddon, during which Israel is defeated, its temple desecrated in some manner. Now, we're going to attempt, and it's just an attempt. We must always mix humility with any prophetic discussion, because as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13:9, our prophecy is always incomplete. But we're going to attempt to place the prophetic scriptures into each of these four categories and see what we can learn from them. My concern is that some of us are so certain Israel from this point on is safe and will not see a defeat, that if wrong, the faith of some could be undermined. And just in general, we have to be careful about what we expect for certain in the future. Have there not been many times in our history from 1874 on that certain expectations have failed to come to pass? Now, let's start with the first and the easiest siege. That's the one in AD 70 to 72. Now, shortly before his death, Jesus predicted Israel's glorious temple would be destroyed. And this came as a shock to his followers. By the way, his prediction can be missed. It's in Matthew 23:38. He said, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." Now that word desolate is 2048, and it means by implication waste. It's even translated desert and wilderness. Their house of which Jesus spoke was the temple. He's saying the temple will be laid waste. In Matthew 21:13, when Jesus drove the money changers out of the temple, he said, "It is written, my house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves." Now, this prediction by Jesus that the temple would be left desolate, which is to say destroyed, was hard for his followers to accept. That is why in the first verse of Matthew 24, we read this, "And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple." Now stop and think about that for a moment. Why would the disciples show him or point out to him the magnificent buildings of the temple? Jesus had certainly spent plenty of time there, and he was certainly familiar with all those buildings. So what were they getting at? What was their point? It was as if to say to Jesus, how could these marvelous structures be torn down? And why? And we know that was their meaning, because Jesus answers them by affirmation in the very next verse what he had said before. See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. That's verse 2. This prediction of the temple's destruction prompted them to ask in verse 3, when shall these things be? Now, there's a plural there, things, because there's another prediction Jesus made right after he predicted the destruction of the temple. It's in Matthew 23:39. I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth, till ye shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Now these are two amazing predictions. There's going to be a destruction of the temple, and then there will come a time when Jesus' enemies, who were in the process of attempting to kill him, would hail him as blessed when he comes in the name of the Lord. He's predicting there a coming that Israel would recognize. So the disciples were certainly interested in the when of these two things. So they said, when shall these things be? Those things are the future coming and recognition of Jesus by his enemies, and the destruction of the temple. Now, evidently, they assumed the destruction of the temple, in some sense, would mean the end of things as they knew them to be. So they also asked, what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Matthew 24:3. Little did they know or suspect that the foretold destruction of the temple and his coming at the end of the age would be millenniums apart. Now, it's important to note that when they asked for a sign regarding the temple desolation, they were asking for something that would indicate its nearness. They had to mean that, because they wouldn't need a sign. The temple was in process of being demolished. They'd easily see that. And that is how Jesus answered their question, in fact. He gave them a sign as to when the destruction was near at hand. And it's only in the Luke account of our Lord's answer that we find this sign. In Matthew and Mark accounts of Jesus' answer, the concentration is on Jesus' return, when his enemies would hail him as blessed. We find the sign of the destruction of AD 70-72 in Luke 21:20. When ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation is nigh. This actually happened. There came a time around AD 70 that Jerusalem was surrounded by armies, but there was a pause for political reasons. Brother Jim has brought that out several occasions in his talks. That pause happened before they were actually attacked. This gave the Christians the opportunity to heed Jesus' words and save themselves by fleeing. Now, that pretty much sums up the first siege on Jerusalem. Now, let's examine the very last one. This last siege upon Jerusalem has gotten very little attention, but it is significant prophetically, as we shall see. Now, here's what's in Revelation about this siege. This is in Revelation 20, verses 7 to 9. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. It's interesting to note Jesus said about AD 70, ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies. And here we have another time altogether when that same thing is mentioned. And compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. So there's our final attack upon Jerusalem mentioned in the Bible. It's at the conclusion of the little season. And once again, we find the haters of Israel banding together to assault Jerusalem. Now, not a great deal of information is given in Revelation, but enough to tell us where there is a fuller account in the Old Testament. By identifying Gog and Magog as the perpetuators of this final siege, we are sent to Ezekiel, from which this passage in Revelation is taken. There are several statements in Ezekiel which have been puzzling to us as Bible students. They talk of a time when Israel will be under attack, and the forces going against them say this. This is Ezekiel 38:11. I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates. Now that's a picture of a completely unprotected Israel. Now we know it's Israel because of the context in Ezekiel 38. Going back to Ezekiel 36, we find the subject matter is easily identified as the restoration of Israel. Now let's stop and think about this. Given world history, given the animus against the Jews historically, given the opposition to their reestablishment as a nation, given the constant attacks upon them to this day from those round about them who have vowed they will not rest until Israel is pushed into the sea, can you foresee a time in this present evil world when they will be confident enough of their security that they will eliminate all their protections from outside adversaries? That just seems awful far-fetched, doesn't it? And that is because this prophecy of Ezekiel 38 does not belong to this age. It belongs at the end of the little season, as Revelation has clearly indicated. Now, we can believe that for one simple reason. It is Revelation that places the events and personalities of Ezekiel 38 at the end of the little season. Now, who are the personalities? Revelation 20, verse 8 is very clear. It is Gog and Magog who are gathered against the holy city at that time. The New Testament is clear. The prophecy about Gog and Magog belongs to the end of the little season. Ezekiel 38, 2. Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him. So there we have the reference to Gog and Magog, which Revelation identifies as forces at the end of the little season. Revelation 20, verse 8 also mentions that Gog and Magog's attack will be made up of a very large number. To gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. Ezekiel 38, 9 and 15 likewise describe a very large number. Thou shalt be like a cloud, cover the land, thou and all thy bands, and many people with thee, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. Revelation says their end will come by fire. Revelation 29, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Ezekiel 38, 22. I will rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing rain and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Ezekiel 39, 6. And I will send a fire on Magog. Revelation 20, 7 to 9 duplicates the details of the prophetic vision in Ezekiel 38 and 39 and identifies its fulfillment as at the end of the little season, not this age. There is something that distinguishes this siege upon Israel as opposed to the others in the Bible, besides the participants identified as Gog and Magog. That is in the fact that this particular siege never reaches Jerusalem. These combatants are destroyed in the mountains. Ezekiel 39:4. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands and the people that is with thee. Then comes the time when the weapons of war are destroyed forever. Ezekiel 39:9. And they that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall set on fire and burn the weapons, both the shields and the bucklers, the bows and the arrows and the hand staves and the spears, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. Now, what of the people killed in the mountains that make up Gog's force? Ezekiel 39:13. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them, that they may cleanse the land. As a reminder, we place this siege of Ezekiel 38 and 39 at the end of the little season because that is where Revelation places it. And because in this siege, the attackers get no further than the mountains of Israel and are destroyed there. That is not the case in the second siege upon Jerusalem that is given great prophetic coverage. We're going to move to that second siege now. The second siege, this is the one following the first, which was AD 70-72. The second siege is the one Jesus mentions in Matthew 24:15-16. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, then let them which be in Judea flee, where? Into the mountains. In this case, the flight is to the mountains, because the danger is in Judea itself. The trouble that is centered in Judea is said to become so fierce that it is possible it could expand to the destruction of all flesh. Matthew 24:21-22. For then shall be great tribulation, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. This sounds like the event of Zechariah 14:1-2. Zechariah 14:1-2. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity. Now this sounds like what Jesus described in Luke 21:21-24, which looks like a blending of his prophecy about AD 70 with the second siege of Matthew 24:15. This is Luke 21:24. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Notice this treading down by the Gentiles, and the times of the Gentiles don't begin until they first fall by the edge of the sword and they're led away captive. Now here's the taking of the city and its occupation by Gentiles, which Zechariah described. But also, we find this in Revelation 11:2, which gives the length of the times of the Gentiles, not as 2,520 years, but as 42 months. Quote, but the court which is without the temple leave out, and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. Jesus said Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Here Revelation gives it as a period of 42 months. Now, that period coincides perfectly with the last half of Daniel's 70th week that we've talked about in other studies. In the middle of that last week, which leaves 42 months, Daniel 9:26 says, the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. In the next verse, we learn that the 42 months is begun with, in the middle of the seventh, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering, and on a wing of the temple, he will set up an abomination that causes desolation. That's verse 27. Of Daniel 9, NIV. The abomination of desolation, according to Daniel, is set up in the midpoint of the last week of the 70th week, 70 weeks. Going on, we've got Jesus marking the abomination as the event to signal getting out of Judea We've got the prince of Daniel 9:26 destroying the city. We've got that lasting for 42 months. We've got Zechariah describing the taking of Jerusalem. We've got Jesus describing the Gentiles taking over Jerusalem for the length of the Gentile times, which Revelation says is 42 months, the period of the last half of Daniel's 70th week. Now, Daniel 11, beginning with verse 21, describes the exploits of, quote, the vile person. Now, we've seen from earlier studies, he's the little horn of chapter 7 and 8, and this was last week, and the beast of Revelation 13, because all those prophetic figures share in common distinctions, including warring against the saints and prevailing for a 42-month period. In Daniel 11:31, it is this vile person that places the abomination, which we have seen kicks off the second half of Daniel's 70th week, and which Jesus says marks the introduction of the time of trouble in Judea. We quote, this is Daniel 11:31, excuse me. And arms shall stand on his part. They shall pollute the sanctuary of strength. They shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. It is interesting to note that the last thing he does before he is destroyed, this is the vile person, is mentioned in Daniel 11:45. He shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Now this is a prophetic thumbnail sketch, but it furnishes pretty clear evidence that Israel is in for a serious defeat at some point in the future at the hands of this prince who shall come, the little horn, the vile person, the beast of Revelation 13. Now, going on to the third siege. After this second siege, which is successful, but as Zechariah says, still leaves a remnant of Israel. Zechariah 14:2. Half of the city shall go forth into captivity, but the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Now we get to the third siege upon Israel. It is at that time that God fights for his people. Zechariah mentions this in Zechariah 14:3. Now this is after verse 2, where the city is taken, and so on. Quote, then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. This would be the time mentioned in Revelation 16:13-16, when the nations are gathered for the battle of that great day of God Almighty, which takes place in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. According to my Bible dictionary, that's a reference to the Plain of Megiddo. This is expanded upon in Revelation 19:17-21, where we find the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together, quote, to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet. Those both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. Now, if the sequence of Revelation is to be accepted, it is at this point that Satan is bound, not before. This is Revelation 19:21, continuing through Revelation 21:2. And the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth. And all the fowls were filled with their flesh. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. So this final siege upon Israel in this age takes place at the end of the 1260 days, 42 months, during which the beast has been given free rein. Now we reach the point where he and his cohorts are destroyed by God as they make their final attempt to totally wipe out Israel. This would coincide with the smiting of the image of Daniel 2 on its feet, which represented this last world power that would be given dominion. Now we see the end of all human rule and the beginning of the rule of Christ with his church, who will reign for 1,000 years. Satan is bound. There is one final confirmation that the safe dwelling of Israel does not happen until the end of the millennium. In Zechariah 14, the first two verses, we read about the second siege upon Jerusalem, which is successful. In verse 3, we are told that at some point after that, the Lord will fight for his people. And that's what we've just been reading about in Revelation Armageddon. It is after this fight by God on behalf of Israel that we read about, beginning in verse 4, this is in Zechariah, the setting up of the kingdom. Verse 9 says, "And the Lord shall be king over all the earth." It is then that we read, "And there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited." I'll read that again. "And there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited." In Zechariah, that safely inhabited time is after the setting up of the kingdom, which is after God fights for his people. So there we have four prophetic sieges upon Jerusalem. The first in AD 70 to 72. The temple destroyed, the Jews scattered. The second, when the little horn beast comes on the scene and succeeds in taking the city and desolating the sanctuary in some manner. The third, when the beast and his cohorts marshal their forces to completely wipe out Israel, at which time God takes a hand, destroys them all. Finally, the siege at the end of the little season, when all those deceived by Satan join forces once again to attack Israel, at which time they get no further than the mountains, where they are all destroyed in second death. By the way, according to Revelation, as regards individuals, that is the first time second death is afflicted on anyone. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13:9, our prophecy is always incomplete. This was just merely an attempt to put together some prophetic scriptures that seem to go together into certain periods of time. Some may be correct, much or all of it may be incorrect. If nothing comes of this but a willingness to re-examine our prophetic views and consider the possibility there is still much in Daniel and Revelation and even Matthew 24 to be studied and understood more clearly, then this effort has been worthwhile. In any case, let us remember, season all prophetic views and discussions with humility. Because as Paul said, our prophecy is always incomplete. The main thing in our walk is not our love for our prophetic interpretations. The main thing in our walk is our love for our brethren. Thank you for listening, and may the Lord add his blessing and overrule all that's said amiss. But we're
back at 11:45. We will close with all